Thank you for joining us on this episode of Eminent Teachnology with Dr. Rochelle Newton and Drew Stennett, where we examine current and emerging technologies through the lens of diversity and equality. So hello, everybody, and welcome to a new episode of Eminent Teachnology with Dr. Rochelle Newton and Drew Stennett. Today, we are going to be talking about some of the concepts behind The Social Dilemma, which is a movie on Netflix about, I won't say like how awful social media is, but it definitely veers in that direction, I would say. What about you, Rochelle?
I don't know that I think social media is awful. I think it's a really useful tool if we use it with the right intentions. I think when you make it for a whole bunch of other things, like I think the fact that none of them have any true guidelines other than the size and the type of content you can upload, but you can put anything out there. So you can put pictures of yourself, put all these other, by ever. I think that it would be really helpful to have a social media platform that is for good. You know, it does, its whole purpose is for good. You know, I think that when Facebook started out, it really did have honorable intentions, you know, like collecting people who went from school to school so you could stay in touch with your classmates and friends and all that. And I still think some of that is somewhat honorable. You know, I don't know if you've been paying attention, but Facebook has been running commercials on television about how the internet has not changed since 1996, the rules and regulations of the internet. You know, what's really interesting about that is that thing that we should all apply when something comes around us. You know, you get that little spidey feeling like, what's in it for me? Why do they want to do this to me? Why do they need us to help them do that? Because one, they're trying to force Apple to allow them to collect Apple data off of Apple devices. You know, other proprietary institutions and activities, they're trying to control how those data is, because what Facebook wants to do is they want to be the world's repository of all things data and sell it to whoever they want to sell it to at the biggest buck. I think that we need to be inherently frightened of that, if you think about that in a very simple way, because if you go back to early on when Facebook and stuff started coming out, kids and people would be posting things about their lives, their cells, places they've gone, things like that. That data never dies. It may get archived out of the current view, but it's always there. And a lot of people said, oh, when I went back to look for it, it's not there. It's gone. It's not gone. They just made it so that you can't see it anymore, but they still have every piece of data you've ever put there. And not to pick on Facebook so much, but, you know, before the presidential Facebook dilemma, there was the fact that Facebook was collecting health data. So if you put on your posting that you had a heart attack or some member of your family's having some kind of hereditary or some kind of illness, they were selling that information to like the American Heart Association, the Cancer Society, all of these people selling this information, and you never gave them permission. And why I struggle with all these things is they claim that you did, because somewhere when you signed up, this little box you checked that says you agree to our terms and conditions, da 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 da. But what's not really fully spelled out and for the average human being is to understand what that box means when you check it. So all of us do it. Every time you buy something, especially digitally, you have to agree to the terms or agree to whatever it is that they're putting in place. The problem is you are signing away your rights. So for me, social media and a lot of technology has become very possessive of who you are, and they know more about you in some cases than you do.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I really like your idea about like a social network for good. The thing that I struggle with that is like, how would they monetize something like that? Because I think, like you said, like, I feel like Facebook probably started off with good intentions, like not counting like I think their like original start was sort of like as a hookup app for Mark Zuckerberg. But like, I think after that, I think it was in like a good place, but eventually they were like, well, we got to make money and nobody's going to like, you know, users aren't going to pay for us. Like Drew Stennett's not going to send Facebook $5 a month to have the privilege of being on there, because then someone else would make a more free one. So then they said, well, if the users aren't going to pay, we'll just get advertisers to pay us and we'll just sell all the user information. And, you know, that's sort of like their revenue generating machine. Like, how would a company that wanted to do something, that wanted to like be good, make money? Would it be like end user fees and, you know, you're paying to maintain control of your data?
Combination of things. So the first is you know, products that are good for us, resources that are good for us, people that are good for us, they promote them and they sell them the way they do. So those good people. So for example, if you are a vegetarian and there's a really great vegetarian company, that company would buy the data from Facebook. Facebook just has to make sure that the person who's, so as a third party, you are the third party. You are not the first or the second, you're the third party, right? So yeah. Facebook and the business relationships they enter into with whomever on the backs of your work, your life, your stories, whatever it is, they take it and they turn it into money. So if they were going to set up a site that wasn't for, you know, like, so I don't think there's anything wrong with promoting a political campaign or whatever the things are that they do. The problem is it needs to be fair time. So if you're going to promote somebody like number 40, whatever his number was, and you do for 46, fair promotion. So here's what's good about this person, here's what's bad. And because they have such great researchers and data analysts, they can get all the data, compress it into something that can go into form that would be for good. I don't know if you remember this. This has happened. It happened, I think the first really, really bad case of it may have happened in 2008. Of internet bullying, right? Mm-hmm. So you're on the internet and you know you get all these friend requests from people and after a while they start bullying you. And if you have any discretion in your life, and this story is about a young woman by the name of Audrey Pott. Young, well, I think she's 17, 18 years old. She went to a party. There was lots of alcohol. The parents had gone away. So there's a lot of alcohol, lots of stuff. And I think it was the first time she had drank, but I don't remember all that specifically. But anyway, she had gone to this event and she's having a great time, and they're all young high school students, naive, don't understand. The boys are a little bit older, but a little bit more streetwise. She eventually gets raped at this party by four or five guys. And then after this happens to her, she doesn't have any memory, because remember, she's intoxicated. Now she doesn't have any memory, but they had drawn on her body with a green permanent marker, like where they had been, what they did to it, you know, so like, you know, did this to that, did this to that. It was just really, really horrible.
Yeah.
Instead of the system turning around to fix that, what the system did is all those high school friends and all the other people who knew about it started posting more and more. So eventually pictures came out. They were posting this on social media and posting it in all these other places. The little girl could not find relief. She killed herself because this had happened to her. And so she didn't even remember what happened. Her best friend was at the party, he wasn't forthcoming. So she was struggling this. The way social media becomes good is it does what's best for everybody. We just don't, like, I always tell people this, you know, this is too long a thing I'm saying, but for example, if you go home, do not put on Facebook before you're leaving, I'm going on vacation for 6 weeks to Rome. No, that's like an email to all the robbers in the world. I'm not home, come over and rob me. Yeah. If you want to tell people about it, either tell them afterwards, show them pictures or something, but don't make it. And I think that's where the management of social media needs to have a policy and more ethical movements. And so I don't think Facebook, probably most of them are ethical. You know, I mean, I don't see how you get into, because you don't allow people to be hurt by their own actions, even if they're too naive to know that they're going to be hurt.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to jump back to something you were saying before too, with the political ads. Like, what scares me is, like, it's not that they can say, hey, we're going to show, like, you know, 50% Trump ads and 50% Biden ads. Like, that's not how, like, their algorithm works. Like, they know, like, who's on the border, right? Like, they know this person is probably not going to vote, but we can sell a bunch of ads at them. And, you know, Trump wants to buy those ads and we're pretty, like, they're going to give us money and then we're going to be able to switch them. Like, at least personally, I never saw a single Trump ad on my Facebook page because I'm pretty sure Facebook knows, like, that's a lost cause, right? Like, he's not going to, giving him a Trump ad is not going to do anything. But somebody who's maybe has their mind less made up, or somebody who, you know, is leaning in that direction, you know, those Facebook ads may really push them over the point. And that's what scares me, is like that sort of super target. And it goes both ways. I'm sure it goes the same way for Biden as well. Like, you know, they know not just, hey, you're a voter. They know, hey, this person probably didn't vote last election. Maybe they're going to vote this election. They live in this area. These are their interests. These are the movies, or not the movies, the videos they've been watching. You know, maybe they're watching a bunch of QAnon videos online. Maybe that's a great ad market for a certain candidate. We're going to, like, hyper focus down on these, you know, you know, super focused, I don't even know what to call them, like regionalisms or personalities. And that's, I mean, that's pretty effective, I think.
Absolutely. And one of the things that I don't think our whole society recognizes is, you know, we hear a lot about automation and machine learning and artificial intelligence. When you go out on Facebook or whatever social media platform you use and you put out there, you know, I think this person, and if we're talking politics, this person is not great. Or if they're saying lock Hillary up or whatever it is. So this is the message that the people are putting out there. So Facebook and their algorithms and sources can go out and scrap together a profile of who you are. So they can make out that you're a Democrat or make out that you're a Republican or mm-hmm. moderate or whatever it is. So you're constantly telling people too much about yourself. And you know, the thing that really puzzles me about this time, and hopefully I don't live long enough to see all this automation is coming, but just imagine every time you go into a big box or relatively medium, large size store, you are being recorded. Every single action you take, you go down and get a pack of bananas, if you go, you know, get a coffee, whatever it is, you are being recorded. No one asked you, could you be recorded? And you, as we talked about before, some states have the right to record. You can record anybody and some don't. Fortunately, North Carolina has the right to record. And the way that leans is only one person has to agree to the recording. So in other words, when you go into Target and they record your image and track you all around the store, Target agreed to record you. You didn't have any consent in that. And the problem with what social media and these different things are doing is we are providing them with just enough information for them to create a whole new process for us and define who we are every single day. So, and I think I remember this, Verizon said the average person creates over 100,000 pieces of data a day. Yeah. Now, I didn't say 100 or 1,000, but 100,000 pieces of data a day. Now, you might say, well, I only sent one email. How could I? But each one of those emails, each character can find some value. And the other side of this, which is really funny, and I learned this with Google very, very early on. So if you have Gmail, I have Gmail. When you would type something, like say spam, because of my work, I would just, all of a sudden, an ad for spam would pop up to my right. So I could go buy some spam because they're telling me. So how are they linking every word that I say to something? And they've gone further now, is when you start typing a sentence. So about my diversity chat. So I always send people, here's the link to your diversity chat. I put in, here is the link. It fills in, autofills diversity chat. And then I put a period. And I say, may I upload it? Upload the video. Before I can get to upload, it's already pre-filled with that. Yeah. I'm like, how do you know what I'm thinking? Are you in my head? You know, that can count, you know, but my behavior, I've seen that, sent that type of email before, I put those kinds of things. So it's learning and then thinking for me, cutting down the amount of work I have to do, which in a lot of ways is great because I don't misspell as many words when I'm typing because my brain and my fingers don't work at the same pace. But on the other side, who am I now? Because they know what I'm thinking. They know what I want to say in this email.
Yeah. When my emails start autofilling themselves, I purposefully try to not let it autofill. I'm like, okay, well, maybe that is what I was going to say, but I'm going to change it a little bit because I don't want Google to know me. Like, I mean, they do know me that well, but it's one of those things that like weirds me out and I don't know. I don't like it. I was having a conversation with my wife this week. I was scrolling through Instagram and like, we're usually pretty savvy about like not clicking on ads, right? I can see an ad. I don't want to click on it. I just don't really like ads, but I saw an ad for something and I was like, ooh, I really want to see more information about that. I'm going to suck it up and click the ad for this. And it was just like a little pin, like a little lapel pin. And now all I get is ads for lapel pins. Like I clicked it that one time. I see them on Facebook. They come up in my Google results. Like it's everywhere. And it's just like, oh, I should not have clicked the ad for that pin. Like now Google, Facebook, Instagram, like everything just sees me as like someone who wants to buy a lapel pin really bad. And like all the ads are pretty good. Like I can't say that I don't want some of those pins. They look pretty nice.
Absolutely. The same thing. I had gone somewhere and I saw a man with a pair of OnCloud shoes. So I Googled OnCloud shoes.
Uh-huh.
And I was on my phone. Since I Googled that, I have gotten 85 million ads for OnCloud shoes. These are nice looking shoes. Very, 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 very effective for walking and all that stuff. So I Googled it, you know, to find out what it was. And it was just amazing the number of ads I have gotten since I went to look for this. And, you know, the shoes are not cheap. So I assume that's part of the process. Yeah. But it was really amazing to me that I didn't even say I wanted some. I just Googled it, you know? So I was like, okay, what is that? So I just put the link for him in the chat. But, you know, what's really interesting is how much of yourself you are losing every day. And we aren't concerned about it. It's almost like climate change and all the other things, gun violence. We don't seem to be aware of how much this is impacting us every single day until it enters us out the picture. And so the robot is going to say, well, let me see, you had fried chicken for dinner yesterday. We are going to cook you some grilled chicken today because whatever because is, and there you go. So you lose yourself to a degree that you don't have control over yourself. And after a while, people are going to be telling you what to do. For your health, you can't eat that cheeseburger today because you may die. We've done some investigating into your health and we don't think you should eat cheeseburger. So it's knowing too much about me to the point that I start losing myself. And the question is, and this is for those people who think I'm futuristic and thinking, talking way out there. But if you look at some of those early movies that came out, you know, Back to the Future is a very interesting movie. All of these things allow us to have our lives recogitated into something somebody else thinks is right for us, right? So the boy goes back to the future, sees his parents and all that stuff, and does something to make a change. I don't remember that movie. Oh, but you know, all of these things are taking over our lives and we're not paying attention. And what's really so interesting about social media is, you know, so I don't know how many there are. I think I've got this Snapchat. Where is it? TikTok, never used it. No, I have an idea. Twitter, yeah. LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram. I can't name them. I'm totally sure. Why do we need that many?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So Twitter only allows you to do 240 characters. One of them allows you to put up a picture that disappears. And why do we need so many? Because there's big money in it. And I can tell you, if you are listening to me, people, no one, I don't care who the company is, Pfizer, greatest things to sliced bread, whatever it is, they are all doing it for money. They're not doing it because they care about you.
Yeah, only for money. Absolutely. I think I have an account on all of those just because I feel the obsessive need to get on any social media that exists. I may not like log into it every day or even have it on my phone, but just like having an account, I don't want to miss out. So do you ever get into doom scrolling on social media?
So, you know, in my house, so, you know, it's four of us in the house, right? And so my husband, my son, my daughter, and me. So my husband and my son are, and probably my daughter, are the three hugest consumers of social media. They have everything. And so my husband comes on, this is what you see him doing. From the time he gets home from work, he's just scrolling. What the hell are you looking at through the phone? So I go over there and look, he's on Facebook, he's on Instagram. But why are you looking at it? I just want to read what people are saying. Why? Yeah. I don't have enough interesting stuff in your life. You care about what other people are doing. But then he and I'm not talking about doing this. Like if he gets home at 4 o'clock, from 4 o'clock to maybe 7, 8, 9 o'clock, that's all he's doing, scrolling. And my son never puts it down. We're in the middle of eating breakfast. He puts the phone down long enough to say the morning's prayer, and then he's back on eating it and scrolling it. So how can you do this? Why are we so desperate to learn? You know, and I remember there was an article put out in Psychology Today a few years ago. It says the reason why social media is so appealing is people are so bored with their own lives, so they look for more inciting things to do. And say, I said, that's pretty pitiful if that's what we're doing. Because
yeah. And I totally like see that as a reason, but I also don't know if it's totally true because I also find myself like scrolling a lot, like just sitting down and mindlessly flipping through the phone. But I don't really know that it's like total boredom either. Like I can't imagine that everybody's that bored, or is it just like we all need to like fill those blank moments now with space where we used to just be able to like sit. Now we have to sit and look at something.
Or do something, right. And the question is, it's like how much of your time are you devoting to these exciting or some kind of visual images that you see in these things or words that you see? How much time are you devoting to for that? And again, how is that impacting you? And I'll go you one further. There's this television show called The Human Within. It's on Netflix. You should watch it.
I have not heard of that.
I mean, I'll send it to you. You should watch it. It's a wonderful thing. It's about your body. And one of the things I learned, you know, watching this series is how everything that happens in your body happens to your body. It's like a well-orchestrated army, very, very well, right? So stimulus. So we are used to light. If you were to get locked in a closet or cave or somewhere where it's dark, your brain figures out how to see in the dark.
Yeah.
But when you start altering how you see or how you do things, your brain then says, either I'm going to learn how to do that or I am going to delete that. So for example, COVID and some of these other things that get in our bodies. Any, you know, it said when you touch a counter, when you hold a glass, open a door, you're picking up germs.
Yeah.
The outside layer of your body, the skin, is your greatest protector, right? Everything, like if you get something close, you're paying attention, you get something too close to your eyes automatically close, right? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, bug flying by you outside, a bug, your mouth closes. Not you doing that. That's your brain thinking about it. And the brain is always thinking of how to make itself better. It's always on the defensive. How do I make everything okay? The brain and the immune system, the heart, they're always protecting us so that we can stay alive. So this sensory overload that we're giving it, what is it that we're telling it to think about? Because usually before we have time to ponder and meditate and think about things, the days move slowly. The days doesn't move slowly. You woke up this yesterday morning and it was Monday. It's going to be Friday tomorrow because that's how fast the week is going to go. And it's like that all the time because we're constantly stimulating ourselves with something. But how long do you just quiet your brain, focus your eyes on nothing that's moving or digital, like no TV, just let your eyes look at a tree or look at something, because you don't know what you're doing to your body. But let me send you this Netflix thing, because that's really, it's really interesting to me.
Yeah. So do you ever do, it sounds like you're sort of talking about like meditation. Have you ever, purposefully done that or practiced it?
I have. It's hard. It is very hard because, you know, what I have not managed to master is slowing my mind. Now, there are people who can slow their mind. So in other words, to meditate or to concentrate really hard, you know, like if you and I are sitting around talking, we're just talking about the color of a tree or something.
Mm-hmm.
And we're focusing on the tree. We've got our mind all on that tree. And all of a sudden, some other thought comes somewhere else. That's kind of translational to that tree. So we may be thinking, wow, I need to cut down the trees in my yard. That tree might fall away. That thought comes along because of that subject matter. So it's kind of like our Facebook and Google. They're feeding you information based on stuff that you've thought about. So, but to meditate, you need to be able to block out the interruptions. You're never going to be able to block them out fully, but you need to block out the interruptions. And so it's really interesting to think about, you know, why do we need so much stimulation for ourselves? And supposedly the only way to quiet the mind so you can process yourself. I think some people say marijuana is one of the ways, you know, I keep hearing that people can't wait to marijuana because supposedly it expands your mind. Mm-hmm. I don't do any more mind expanding than I've already got because mine's already way over expanded. But, you know, to get us to a place where we can meditate or we can do something to slow ourselves down so we can think. Because if you think about this, there's another one of these things you can see when I watch a TV, The Titans Who Built America. The one last week, I'm going to put that in there too. The one this past Sunday was the history of the television. It's truly amazing. A Russian man and a man in Nebraska are the founders of TV. The Russian man eventually finds a company that is NBC. First one out there. There's nobody else like NBC. And then the other guy's name is Farnsworth. He actually develops and designs and patents the technology that makes TV work. The Russian guy was richer and more powerful. He stole the guy's things. He stole the guy's patent and everything and used it and did not face any consequence for using it. Because the other guy was a little guy and he was so poor and he couldn't afford it. Brilliant. But the point I'm trying to make is both of these men thought about nothing else but television day and night until they conquered it. Electricity is the same way. Cars, everything you can think about. The people, these original titans, what I think is really unique about them is that they were able to conquer their minds and to focus on one thing, which is why they were so great. And so if you think about the people who flew first, cars, whoever it is, Tesla, now there's something for Tesla. Did you know that Tesla founded AC current?
Oh, yeah. I did, but I do a lot of, I love the Tesla story. So,
but I mean, you know, it's not the Tesla who we think of today driving a car. I think it's the same family name and all that, but that, you know, he was up against whatever the guy is who was doing electric. The other guy who was doing electric, he was higher set on DC current, whereas and it's like that complete focus, years and years and years of grinding to perfect an idea. But if you got 8 million things running through your mind, so, you know, the TV is on, the children got to eat, I got to cook, I got to go to the grocery store. How are you going to make something so supreme and so great that it changes the world? You have to narrow your mind enough to focus on one thing, and that's all you think about. It doesn't mean you stop living and breathing and all that stuff, but your primary focus always goes back to that thing you're trying to accomplish. And that's what was missing in what I think is happening with social media, is they've taken that away from us. And while we haven't had any really great, big, powerful innovations like we did back then, although, you know, we've done a lot of innovations, the innovations like that is not the same.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to Eminent Teachnology. If you like the show, please review, subscribe, and recommend us to your friends and family. We'd love to hear feedback from you as well. You can email us at eminentteachnology@gmail.com. See y'all soon.